Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to
Fun Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Cousby.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
On iTunes and Stitcher, and also right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It has been a very busy weekend for Mary and I. We just finished hosting the New York City Northeast Regionals of the National Homebrewers Competition. And Mary, you did an incredible job. Incredible job.
As did you, Mr. Kuzme.
Behind the scenes. and if you participated in that and you sent in entries, I've submitted our scores. The American Homebrewers Association has to confirm them. I've got to scan our flight sheets, and then they're going to verify them, and then they might even be posted by the end of the week. But it will all happen pretty fast. We're pretty being as efficient as we can on this. Congratulations ahead of time to those who won and are moving on. And
from our site as well as the other 11 sites.
That's right. And I think there is still time to volunteer for some of those other sites. Actually, there are 12 sites in total. Four of them at this point now have concluded. And in weekends to come, you can sign up to volunteer to judge and steward. Judge if you are BJCP registered, steward if you are interested in seeing how these competitions go on. And I can't stress how incredible it is to have like more help than you need. So if you want to go, I'm sure that they will welcome you. You can go to brewingcompetition.com, sign in to judge or steward at the regions. And I don't forget which other cities they actually are. I've been so busy thinking about ours.
I know, I'm looking it up, but I'm having some problems here.
Okay, before we get
I can tell you who else. All right, so April 10th and 11th will be Chicago, Illinois, Denver, Colorado, Philly, Pennsylvania, St. Paul, Minnesota, San Diego, California, and Zanesville, Ohio.
Sweet. So if you live near those areas, please volunteer your time because we can certainly use it.
Yep. So let's do some announcements before we talk a little bit more about running a homebrew competition. So coming up on April 25th is the
Pride of Brooklyn Homebrew Festival. I believe it's in its third year. It's a homebrew competition. It's held at Littlefield in Brooklyn. That's 622 DeGraw Street in Brooklyn. It is from 1 p.m. until a little later that afternoon. I actually don't know the concluding time. I will be a judge at this, too. So there are 25 different homebrewers are participating. It's been awesome in years past. I look forward to it this year again. And what else do I have to say about that? You can find it. You can purchase tickets through Ticketfly.com, or you can find it if you look up Pride of Brooklyn Homebrew Festival. You can go to their Facebook page. There's a direct link and photos of years past and excitement of this year. That's about all I have to say about that.
All right. So as I've mentioned, not only have I been brewing beer again and making other beverages and foods, but I've also started blogging again. So you can find I posted the passion fruit mosaic saison recipe, as well as my Green Market Beet short mead, which I ended up calling, now I can't remember what I called it. But anyway, they are both on My Life on Craft. Oh, it's Heart Skips a Beet short mead. That's what I ended up calling it. So I've posted both of those on My Life on Craft. I'm excited about continuing to write and share more of my beverages that I've been making, as well as food. So I'm going to try to stick to some themes here. I'm going to have a Fermentation Friday. So hopefully one recipe every Friday that is something fermented. And then I'm doing short meads maybe not every Monday, but every couple of Mondays I'll have a new short mead. I think short mead's one of my favorite beverages to make. And they're really fast and really easy and very flexible. So there's a ton of options for flavors. So we have formed Club Ferment About It here in Brooklyn, but it's a worldwide fermentation club. So if you are...
The impetus for this pretty much directly is because we are coming out to San Diego for the National Home Brewers Conference, and we're not sure that we're able to send kegs from New York this year. And so what we would love is anybody on the West Coast who's driving to this competition, if they would like to, you don't have to stand at our booth unless you'd like to, because you might be participating in your own club's booth and representing, but if anybody would like to make any fermented beverages of the alternate kind, we would love to serve them.
Yeah, especially if you don't have a club, or for whatever reason, we would love for you to come share your beverages. We are going to bring kegs out, though, for sure.
One way or the other,
yes,
you think?
Yes, absolutely. Right.
Still working it out.
Hey, I want to share all these crazy, wonderful alternative ferments that we've been making. On that same note, we would love to hear from you. So you can send us an email or tweet at us. So our email is fumenaboutit, fumenaboutit.
Note the D-I-T. Don't be a tit.
fumenaboutit@gmail.com, and it's at fumenaboutit for Twitter. So we would love to hear if you have any show ideas, or you know somebody special or a special business that you would love to hear on the show. Again, also, we'd love to hear, what do you like? What do you like about the show? What do you think we could do better? Any of that. We would just love to hear from you. Also, we might actually start having a live question, or it might not be live, but it'll be a surprise question. So if you have a question that you would either like to call in and ask us, or you would like to send us a question to answer on the air, we are definitely open to those at this point. So again, our email address is fumentaboutit@gmail.com, or you can tweet to us at fumentaboutit.
And I think that this is leading towards, I learned something that what they're doing at Inebriation Nation in Australia when I was on that show. They have a hotline that you can call 24 hours a day. Basically, you record your question on there, or you know, with the understanding that you just say it, state in the beginning whether you want it to be played on air or not. But we might end up doing that, have a little fun about a hotline for fun.
Yeah, we're going to work on that. That's on our to investigate list. So let's go back to this homebrew competition. I think this was, I guess I was judge coordinator for Homebrew Alley a couple of years ago.
In tandem with John Nagley.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But this was my first time really being involved with the first round of the National Homebrewers Competition. Mm-hmm. Now, many of you know, I think we've mentioned this before, but the National Homebrewers Competition is run by the American Homebrewers Association, and it is the largest international beer competition in the world. They have, as we've mentioned before, 12 first round sites. So homebrewers send their beer to these first round sites, and then basically between one and three from every category, according to BJCP guidelines. And we're still using the previous guidelines. The new guidelines are about to come out, but this year's NHC is using the previous guidelines.
The 2008 guidelines.
Yep. So there are still 27 categories.
28.
Mm-hmm. And, that's right. I always forget about the, there's two cider categories. Anyway, so I totally lost my train of thought there. All right, no. So
it's been a long
one to two beers from each category from each first round.
Three.
Well, it could be up to three.
Up to three. Right.
It's not always.
Nope, that's
because you have to score over 30. So the beers are judged on a scale of 1 to 50, and in order to qualify to go on, a beer has to score at least 30. At the first round. So then all of these will go to the National Homebrewers Competition, which is in San Diego, California this year, and they'll be judged, and then those will be winners of the official competition. Those points also go towards things like the awards, like Club of the Year and the Ninkasi Award. So they really go into a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what it was like to run a homebrew competition. So first of all, in New York City, it's a little tricky to find a reasonable place that A, has enough room, and B, has a reasonable cost. Real estate here is...
And a reasonable environment with which to judge.
Exactly. Well, yeah, reasonable space and the suitable environment.
Right.
And then also at a cost that is affordable. Since this is all not-for-profit, the American Homebrewers Association is a not-for-profit organization.
We're all volunteers doing
absolutely
this whole thing.
So a few years ago, Chris, you had said... This is our third year, right?
Yeah, for New York City hosting it.
Being
yeah.
a first round.
Mm-hmm.
So you had found Single Cut last year, or you and Ken, I guess.
Yep.
So, go ahead and...
Well, we did it at Alewife first because it worked, and it's what we had together for you know, we do that. We do Homebrew Alley there, and so it was easy to set up there.
And Ale Wife is a bar and restaurant in Long Island City, Queens. So mm-hmm. very convenient to both Brooklyn and Manhattan and other places.
And then Single Cut just let us in with open arms. They've given us a great discount. It's a great environment to do it. There is sometimes, you know, a couple smells coming from the actively fermenting fermenters. With if you can, you know, exclude that. From, you know, you got to put your nose deep in the in those in those in the glasses to make sure you're not getting some of those. But they the staff was absolutely awesome to us. They were accommodating. All the beers were treated with the utmost respect on pallets in their cold room as soon as they arrived. You know, big thanks and shout outs to Rich Buscetta, the head brewer and owner, proprietor, and especially Amanda Meyer, who just helped facilitate everything, the taproom manager. They gave us a great discount on beers, so, you know, our judges were happy. They really pampered us, like, all across the board. It was awesome.
Yep. And so Single Cut Beersmith is a brewery. It's in the Astoria neighborhood of Queens, so it's pretty easily accessible. It's just a little bit of a walk from the subway, but not undoable. There's also parking, so that was two qualifications that are important to us in New York City, that there is some access, easy access from major train lines. And we rented tables, and we were literally judging in the brewery. So it was actually pretty clean. I mean, like Chris said, there we're surrounded by actively fermenting beer tanks, but overall, I think it was a pretty good environment.
Absolutely.
To do so.
Not noisy, not intrusive from I mean, their tap room was open on Friday night and afternoon.
Yeah, but the tap room's really in front, so we were isolated from the tap room for sure. And there was great lighting on Saturday as well. I mean, Friday night as well, but we had a lot of really nice natural lighting on Saturday in addition to the lighting that's in the brewery. So what are some of the things? You guys, because it was a brewery and in New York State, they do have a small kitchen, but you guys got it catered.
We got it catered, yep.
So Friday night, you ordered pizza, and everyone got a drink ticket.
Yeah, I think what you're going to is, okay, so when running... Okay.
Just talking about kind of how we went about doing all of this.
Yeah.
Because I think, regardless, if you want to set up a homebrew competition, whether you are proposing, you know, to be a first-round location for the American Homebrewers National Homebrewers Competition, or you just want to start a small AHA BJCP competition, these are kind of the things you have to think about.
And you think about them because we're all volunteering our time, and you want your judges happy, you want your stewards happy, and you want things to happen in a timely fashion. So crossing your T's, dotting your I's are important things, and having a good checklist. And actually, the AHA is really great with sending a checklist, even though I completely forgot to get cups ahead of time. cups of all the things I freaking forgot. It was cups.
There's always, you know, mistakes. Yeah. But we did actually
but
get
nobody
a lot.
Noticed. I got enough
that's
cups
true,
by
that's
the time
true.
Anybody,
that's
nobody
true.
Was short of cups.
But I think, you know, we got a lot of really good feedback from some experienced judges that have brewed, that have judged a lot of competitions. And it was very helpful. So on Saturday morning, we just provided bagels and cream cheese, coffee, that kind of thing. And then Saturday afternoon, you had all of the judges and stewards that volunteered not only got breakfast and
ample lunch.
Yeah, but they also got a beer ticket.
They got a beer ticket per flight.
Yep.
If they could still drink those that
right.
weren't.
Right. Not everybody used them, of course, yeah. But at least that was an option. And they could save their beer ticket for, you know, the very end after all of the judging was gone, because the tap room's open at that point. So a lot of people actually hung out at the tap room. But we ordered sandwiches for lunch, sandwiches and salads and desserts, and that was made people happy. You don't want to serve anything that's too flavorful, but you want to have some flavor. That's one constant kind of issue that a lot of people run into, is that you don't want to wreck everybody's palates for the flight that's coming ahead, but you also want to provide them something that's delicious and appealing. We also had a vegetarian option, which we got compliments on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I avoided ordering spicy food, and I made sure not to get everything bagels or garlic bagels or onion bagels.
Right. You know? No garlic cream cheese.
Yeah.
And then as far as judging went, I actually learned a great deal. I was a little nervous about not having enough judges. It really takes a lot of judges to adequately judge a competition of this size. How many entries did we end up with?
We had just about 700 registered, but unfortunately it was only just under 600 arrived. I think that was a due date issue. and just, you know, we're all busy, and sometimes we don't get to what we commit to. So I did spot check and call a lot of people, and they just didn't send them in. So thankfully, it wasn't on my side.
Yeah,
for the most part.
So far as I know. As a judge coordinator, what I learned this year is that we actually have a great. We've been running BJCP classes yearly since at least one in the city, if not more, BJCP class every year since 2006 when I took the exam. So we have a lot of BJCP judges in the New York City area, and there are also ongoing classes in other areas. We have a lot of judges that come in from Long Island and Jersey and Connecticut. So
yet
we're
still
very
not enough,
right? But it's tough. So we also had several BJCP classes that are going on that people have either taken the online exam and they're almost through the class. So they've been judging beers at every class, and they were. Although they're novices, they were recommended by their instructors. So they have been trained pretty adequately. So what I did, and I don't know every judge. So what I did is people signed up online. I went ahead and sent them an email, you know, kind of introducing. And then I had a Google survey that I asked people to fill out. And it basically just asked approximately how many BJCP competitions have you judged? Do you have any other relevant experience outside of BJCP competitions that, you know, would... that you'd be interested in, and then anything else that they would like to let us know. And that I found that was very, very helpful because it gave me an idea of, first of all, how experienced they were. So I knew, you know, I wanted to pair experienced judges with less experienced judges. You're always going to have less experience, you know, a variety of experience in your judges, and you want to pair them up well, and you want to make sure that they're judging the categories that they're really meant to judge. So I thought that was very helpful for me. And I think I did a pretty good job actually of pairing everybody up. So we used a lot of novices but these are novices that are almost done with the BJCP class, have been judging. Most of them have taken the exam. And they were actually used as a third judge. So we had, you know, we were able to add a novice judge as a third judge on each, you know, where appropriate.
Yeah, I think it worked great. And I think I look forward to hearing, you know, anybody's feedback to how we did it, you know, entries and.
Yep. And we also did, I mean, the AHA always, or NHC does Q judging, so which is really helpful. But I think that's really nice for almost any competition.
Yeah, it speeds things up a lot. And if you don't know what that is, you can look it up. But we're going to take a quick break and get back to other stuff on Foment About It.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Man About It on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here in the studio with Mary Izette, author of Speed Brewing, to come out in June this year. You can pre-order it on Amazon. She's a great co-host, and I like her a lot. She was judge coordinator at the National Home Brewers Competition, New York City Regionals. We were just talking about that, but we're moving on now. Speaking of writing, you know, there's a lot of inspiration out there, and we're going to Mary's first Foment About It book review.
Not my first.
Is it?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
But we've had authors on before. But we were very fortunate to receive this book, Fermented Foods for Vitality and Health. So I'll do the disclaimer. This came to us free in the mail. But man, it is a great book. So first of all, it's a paperback. Let me look when it... I made notes, but I don't actually know when it came out. Oh, it came out March 12th, so it's very topical.
Wow.
Ooh, here's my notes. Okay, so it's called Fermented Foods for Vitality and Health. It's by Dunja Gulen. I might be pronouncing that really terrible with my limited Midwestern tongue. Dunja Gulen is the author. And first of all, I think it's very excellent. It has a great base fermentations, how-to. Kefir, both water and milk kefir, yogurt, Rejuvelac, ginger beer, fermented veggies, and sourdough. So those are just a really, this will give you a really good reference and how-to of some very basic fermentations. And then after that, the author goes into, she kind of splits up the rest of the dishes by meal. So there's a breakfast, there's a lunch and dinner chapter, side salads and snacks, breads and pancakes, condiments, dressings and dips, probiotic drinks, and something sweet. And some of the ones that I was really impressed, there's a recipe for comforting cacao porridge, which starts with fermented oatmeal.
Cacao porridge.
Yes, and I haven't fermented oatmeal yet, so I'm definitely going to try this. It's a pretty short fermentation, 24 hours, and then you basically make your porridge. So I'm pretty excited about that. It also has a really nice vegan version of the sourdough crackers that I made a couple weeks ago, which is great. And it has beautiful photos. So there's pretty much one photo, full color, full size photo for every recipe in the book. It's absolutely beautiful. It has some really nice vegetarian, I think it's all vegetarian and possibly vegan, some really attractive photos and delicious sounding recipes. So this is definitely going to get some use around our house.
I'm excited for that.
Me too. Stay tuned for our explorations now
for
that
our
we're
house party, our, yeah. our national house party in Brooklyn. We can fit everybody, I'm sure.
So one thing that we've kind of talked about doing on the show before but haven't is talking fermentation in the news. There are so many amazing things going on in the world of fermentation, and we would like to bring them to your attention. All right, so let's start.
I'm letting Mary do most of this here. Well, big ups and big thanks to our research specialist. Our fermentation research specialist, Dave Sharfstein, who sent us some good links earlier today. And one of them starts with fermentation food linked to mental health.
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to have a disclaimer here. We're not saying that, fermented foods will save your life or, you know, make you live forever. But there are definitely more and more studies that are coming out that are showing that they can have some very positive effects on your health. And this particular article is very interesting.
It's from psychcentral.com.
Yep. And it's about the link of fermented foods to mental health, which I actually haven't seen that much research on. But they've done a lot of this. So this is actually talking about several studies, but one of the first ones is from the Journal of Physiological Anthropology. And they're talking, first of all, our intestine contains about 300 to 500 different species of bacteria that can be roughly divided into health-promoting ones like lactobacilli, which we're all familiar with as sour beer makers, and then harmful ones such as Clostridia. So they were actually looking at the link between fermented foods and positive mental health.
And I argue that, because there are certain bacteria that is good for your health in general and good for your stomach and helps your body just move, and by eating most fermented foods or pickled vegetables, that's generally a healthier diet. And so I think that just by physically being healthy, you're becoming mentally healthy. That's my argument here.
Well, and they did say, so basically the authors said that the link could manifest itself directly through gut-to-brain communication or indirectly through beneficial bodily changes such as improved glycemic control, antioxidant and anti-inflammatory activity, or reduction of intestinal permeability. So, it could be either way. They do mention...
So I am a scientist?
Yes.
Thanks, Mary.
But they do actually mention a couple other interesting articles. So they found that healthy animals, there was a study that had healthy animals given one strain of lactobacillus showed a reduction in anxiety and depression-like behaviors under stress. These animals actually had alterations in the system of the brain concerning the neurotransmitter gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is known as GABA, that were similar to the effects of antidepressants such as benzodiazepine. So that's actually really interesting. So again, those are animal studies, not human. But they did find, there was another study that mentioned a combination of lactobacillus and bifidobacterium given for a month to healthy adults appeared to lead to significant improvements in depression, anger, and anxiety. Now, in their review, the authors caution that not all forms of fermented foods are helpful. So they said, for example, some pickled veggies can grow fungi that increase the production of N-nitroso compounds, which have possible cancer-causing properties. So, obviously, research in this area is ongoing, but it's pretty interesting, some of the studies that are coming out. And that was one of them.
Again, this article is from psychcentral.com, and the name of this article is Fermented Foods Linked to Mental Health by Jane Collingwood.
Also in last week's news was an article about fermented fashion. So I actually tweeted this from our Foment About It Twitter last week. It was both on CNET and The Telegraph. But Australian creative scientist Gary Cass and fashion designer Donna Franklin have added a bacteria called acetobacter to fermented beer and then created a cotton-like fibers from it and an actual dress.
Mm-hmm.
Super interesting. So previously, here's what they call them. They have dubbed the new solid fiber nanolose microbial cellulose, and they say that it's chemically similar to cotton.
You said acetobacter?
Mm-hmm.
I know what dress I'm not taking off of my teeth this year.
It's pretty interesting. They actually first came out with a dress made of fermented wine in 2012. However, it says it was by accident, as Cass mistakenly left a vat of wine open for a week. However, the wine dress had a strange texture which clung to the skin. It had to be kept wet at all times and also smelt strongly of wine. The new beer dress has no smell and can be worn more easily. So this is pretty interesting. That beer dress will actually be on display at the World Expo 2015 in Milan later this year.
I've always loved beer versus wine competitions. It's a whole new level. I'm into it.
All right, next up. Also news last week. So Barry Callebaut of Callebaut Chocolate. I'm probably mispronouncing that too. I'm like the queen of mispronunciation. Anyway, he has borrowed Belgian beer techniques to control cocoa fermentation. This is from confectionarynews.com. So first of all, we'll talk a little bit of how. So chocolate is actually a fermented product. It usually takes place at the farm level. So the cacao beans, after they're harvested, they're heaped into a pile, covered by banana leaves, and left to rest for 7 days to develop flavor. And what they're doing is they're actually fermenting, and that's developing the flavors. So Barry Callebaut has been doing a lot of research. Says teams from the Flanders Institute for Biotechnology and University of Leuven have been led by Professor Kevin Verstreppen, visited Barry Callebaut sites in Africa and Asia Pacific to test various yeasts. They found the ideal strain, Saccharomyces cerevisiae.
That's the jam.
And here's the quote. It says, when this new yeast is added while the cocoa is fermented in the bush, the process becomes faster and more consistent. Moreover, the new yeast strain produces more desirable aroma compounds and hampers the growth of unwanted yeast. The result is even tastier chocolate. So that's pretty cool. They're not yet using this controlled fermentation for their commercial products, but this could change the whole world of chocolate.
But if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's true.
Chocolate is delicious today. No comment from Mary Jo.
No comment.
No comment from the galleys.
All right. In today's news. No, I think this was actually yesterday. Ancient Egyptian brewery was found in Tel Aviv, apparently smack dab in downtown Tel Aviv. It said shards were found under an office construction site in 17 pits used to store agricultural produce in the early Bronze Age. It's around 3,500 to 3,000 BC, for those of us that are not historians. So it says they've also detected a thick, partially baked water and barley mixture that was left to ferment in the sun. It says that beer was consumed by the entire population of Egypt, regardless of age, gender, or status. The Antiquities Authority, Diego Barkin, says it was made from a mixture of barley and water that was partially baked and then left to ferment in the sun. Various fruit concentrates were added to this mixture in order to flavor the beer.
Various fruit.
Mm-hmm. Is that what I said? No.
Yeah.
Fruit. Yep.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
That's very cool.
And then, since we're talking about news, we have to go to an article that I read earlier this year. When was this? This was from January 22nd, actually. This is from the Journal Sentinel Tap from Milwaukee. And there is a home brewer named Rattarasarns that is doing a home brew from Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District wastewater plant effluent.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so it's not. So basically, effluent hasn't gone through kind of the final process of filtering. So Radarasarn is 39. He's a wastewater engineer with the State Department of Natural Resources by day, and he's been homebrewing beer for almost 2 years. So basically, he chlorinated, dechlorinated, filtered, distilled, tested, and added nutrients to the water before beginning to make 5 gallons of what he calls activated sludge, a wheat ale with 5.15% alcohol by volume. So he actually had a taste panel at Lakefront Brewery where his activated sludge went head-to-head with Lakefront Wheat Monkey. And it said the tasters gave it very good scores.
What does that mean?
Well,
I mean, head to head. So they gave it good scores. Is there a winner? Is there
so brewery it, president? It? So the president okay. of Lakefront Brewery, Russ Kilsch, said he says no pathogen known to man that can grow in beer. He says who praised Radarsarn's activated sludge for its golden color. His down note was the beer's carbonation and lack of body. Another taster, Mitchell DeSantis, graded the beer a 7 on a 10-point scale. He said, it's one of the better home brews I've ever had.
Oh, interesting.
So Radarasarn wanted to prove a point by using the water. He said he wanted to raise awareness of the quality of plant effluent. So I think that's kind of cool.
That is very cool.
Yep.
So save your wastewater. It's the moral of the story, right? To make beer.
Kind of.
To make great beer.
I think it's just exciting. I mean, this guy is combining his day job and his hobby, so that's always cool.
And that's our show for Ferment About It this week.
We're going to work on news segments. I think we're going to try to have, there are a lot of really cool things going on, so we're going to try to incorporate at least one or two news pieces in our shows from now on. We're going to get better at it.
We are by no means out of guests in New York City.
And surrounding.
So more fun to come.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll have some interviews that I did with Batch Brewing, I think.
Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, there's a maybe. All right. Matt might be postponed by a week.
We might move one of our guests that we were going to have on later in the month earlier because it works for people's schedules.
I say yes. We should just do it.
Yeah. Cheryl Passwater.
Cheryl Passwater. And what's she going to talk about?
Ooh, she's got a very cool fermented CSA. And then she also taught dosa and idli workshop at the Ferment.
Idli.
Yeah, dosa and idli. Oh, man, they were delicious. And dosa is something that I love to eat at restaurants, but I've never made it at home. And Cheryl made it look really easy. She explained it very well. So we're super excited to talk about that. So that's who we're going to have on next Monday.
Inspiring.
Absolutely. She's doing lots of cool fermentations.
Be here next week. Hopefully we got to confirm it, but you know, to be determined.
Yep.
And with that, thank you, our engineer, Liz. Thank you, David Sharfstein, our research specialist, our search special. What's your official title? Hold on, he'll text me any second.
Research specialist.
Oh, there you go.
Anyway.
Sleep is soon.
Until next Monday, Ferment About It.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.